The Psychedologist.
Caitlin and I recorded this juicy and nourishing conversation over herbal tea in her home. You might even hear her ancient kitty, Mimi, chiming in occasionally. We talk about stories, masks, meditation and Reiki, her relationship to the plants, eating with the seasons, food as medicine, herbs and astrology, the moon, cannabis, and microdosing various medicines, including those that are more famously known for macrodosing, such as ketamine. A recurring theme in the dialogue is tapping into the enormous universe while dropping down into the earth, connecting to being a being who is crossing these many and various planes of existence. Caitlin is a radical wellness clinician and an expert in plant medicine and cannabis care. She has been an herbalist since she first started playing with plants, and she has an extensive background in holistic health. She is also a family nurse practitioner and integrative health coach, specializing in cannabis and preventative medicine. Combining her passion for science, plants, healing, and fun, she created Azala Wellness and Education LLCs, her clinical practice and education platform. She resides in Western Massachusetts, where she can be found watching for hawks and listening to rivers.
Welcome to The Psychedologist, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting.
Thank you for having me in your home. What was your relationship to consciousness as a child?
I had a really amazing imagination and played. I could like slip into another world really easily from a young age. And I was thinking about how that's kind of an extension. I guess that was, you know, my first experience really controlling consciousness was it could flip back into this world, answer a question, and then go right back into wherever I had been, which was, related to books that I was reading or maybe a movie. I read a lot of books. Fairyland, you know, whatever it was. I was always, various like characters that I was being. And I used to like write up whole bios of different characters that I could like slip in and out of being these other people. My cousins and I would play, you know, who do you want to be? And we would really be these other people in other times. That was really my first experience with kind of navigating different consciousnesses.
Yeah. Reflecting on my own resonance with that and being other people or going into a story and feeling like the story was more real than my own life. I'm like wondering, were you also being yourself in between being those people?
Oh yeah, definitely. I remember even just driving in the car, looking out the window and like fiercely imagining all of these different things. And then something would happen in the car and I could just come back and be present with my family and then, you know, flip back out again pretty easily. But I was definitely myself with my family too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a part of you now is also someone else?
I mean, I guess that's interesting. It makes me actually think about the COVID mask. Mm-hmm. And how I really liked the anonymity that offered, and that just being able to feel a little bit invisible. It was like a, you know, just a real mask over my face, and then I could wear sunglasses and a hat. And so, or that also makes me think about when I lived in New York City for 10 years, how part of my love for that time was the anonymity of it, that I could be whoever in a good mood, in a bad mood, and nobody would know. And I could just kind of slip amongst the crowd. So I guess I really like that option of not having to be myself all the time. or not having to be myself, but to be anonymous or be, so that's a really interesting question. I mean, I'm just thinking now even of, I was recently visiting family in Colorado, and I was driving and I dropped some people off and immediately put on Cardi B. Because I was like, this is a side of me like this family doesn't know at all. And I'm like, oh, I just want to be this person right now. I just want to like blast Cardi B. So yeah, I guess I do still kind of slip in and out of roles and keep some things to myself. Yeah.
I'm thinking about my visit with my family last year and so appreciating getting to share space with them and hear their stories and see how they look like me. And we do some of the same mannerisms and talk the same, but also I didn't feel seen by them. And it's like, yeah, the self that I brought is me, but I didn't bring out all of myself. Yeah, I masked parts of myself, and it like sort of depleted my life force by the end of it. Mm-hmm. To the point that when I got with friends, I was out in California, and then when I got together with, you know, more like my, I don't know, psychedelic friends or whatever, I felt all myself able to come out, and there was so much more energy in that.
Yeah. Right. I have a few friends who I feel that like ability to just really relax and take off all those masks and be that, you know, as loud as I want or as private as I want, or, you know, whenever, and not have to navigate it, I guess, or be even aware of it. And I just am so grateful for them. Dancing. Just, you know, bust a move real quick or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Can't do that all the time, but with some people, you actually can.
Yeah. So, will you speak a little bit about your practice of consciousness now? We have feline interference.
Yes. Okay. All right, kitty. My practice of consciousness now. So, I have established a morning routine that is really that I journal, I meditate, and I do yoga. And that's the meditation for me has, I do some Reiki during that, and I do some Reiki symbols during that too, where I'm just kind of energetically writing symbols in my field. And that has been huge over the past, gosh, it's like, what year is it? 2023, maybe 7 years I've been meditating. 6, 7 years I've been meditating. And at first it was really challenging to sit, and then now it's challenging to not sit. And that's so, that feeling, the tapping into the enormous universe, and then also really dropping down into the earth and connecting with the magma at the center of the earth, and feeling like really connecting to being a being that is crossing these planes from earth to sky. And starting off every morning like that is you know, one of my first, you know, the consciousness practice that gets me going in the morning. And I have my various plant medicines that I love, and microdose, and that's been helpful in more of a balancing way than in a consciousness expanding way.
Mm.
So it's not really shifting my consciousness in the moment, but it's really helping me create more space really for the meditation and just for overall wellness. And I'll make time in nature too. When I'm in hiking or at the river, I really, again, feel this, that the insignificance of my life and the like enormity of the world and the universe, and then the connection between those two. And that's really, it feels really spacious. It just, like, I can just let all of the kind of trivial stresses go in those moments.
I've been digging into a morning routine recently myself and highly recommend it. And part of mine is getting outside in the morning. It's actually kind of like, get up, go outside.
Really?
Which was counter to, I was being a bit more yin these last few years of like getting up really, you know, tenderly and softly and like maybe plop over on the meditation cushion, ideally. But mm-hmm. I mean, more often than not, like curling up with my phone and seeing what happened on Instagram over the course of the night, which sometimes is good. But yeah, when I get outside, it feels like the little things that were assaulting me just drop away because there are all these trees and the sky is, you know, whatever color it is, just like the sensory immersion of the feeling of the air, the sounds, maybe even seeing some strangers as I like walk up the sidewalk. Yeah, the perspective shift.
Yeah. Getting, it's like, there's that nice little space in bed with the phone and the thoughts and the, maybe a little tea or something. But then there's this whole big world out there with other people and they're, what's going on with them? You don't even know. Yeah. That's a benefit to community too. I grew up really isolated out in the woods and you occasionally run into somebody on a walk in the woods there, maybe a hunter or another dog walker or something like that. But really, you can go days without seeing other people and being reminded that there are different other people's lives are playing out. It's really, really nice, that isolation, and I crave it. And it's part of, like, I feel like it's kind of programmed into me because that's how I was raised. And then at the same time, I think it's not healthy in some ways because it's so isolating and insular. We had, you know, friends in the neighborhood, but it was, there's so many other people out there doing other things who aren't just middle-class white people affiliated with UMass Amherst.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of other people.
Mm-hmm. I'm even thinking about something I read that was like in the cities. Mimi's weighing in on this.
Yeah.
In the cities, you know, cities tend to be more blue and liberal or democratic, rural tending to be more conservative or Republican generally. And something about the design of that for like dividing power and dividing connection and unity, like and the people in the city like wouldn't be able to understand the rural people and vice versa, and would have all these ideas about each other, and that this is like a seed of intentional divide and conquer sort of thing.
Interesting. I was just informed that in some places people with a lot of money buy up a lot of space in order to affect politics. I just learned this last night. And I hadn't really thought of that rural spaces could be used for that purpose. If they're, you know, if you have control over a really large mass of land, you can also affect the politics of that whole region or the whole state.
What can't you do with money?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Love. You can't buy love.
Right. Well, now I'm like, I want to go back towards the earth here. Talk to me about your relationship to the plants.
Oh, yeah. So growing up in the woods next to a swamp, that's what I did. I played in the woods from the swamp. I had a really nice mossy patch in the backyard, and that's what was my fort. And my friend and I, we would pick mushrooms and we would like make things with them and then bury them in the ground and then pick them up in a week and see what happened, and very experimental with mushrooms, with mosses, with ferns, and the swamp. I was going in, wading right in, playing with pondweed, and would come back like completely covered with muck and have to be hosed off, and really comfortable with that. And when I was 18, I made my first salve with a friend out in Washington State and started learning about comfrey, and then really dove into studying herbalism just from books. But I recently found it's like a little notebook that I started when I was maybe 12 or 13, which with tea recipes, herbal tea recipes in it. So I feel like I've always been working with plants, either just playing or planting teas. And then I just really dove in earnest when I was 18, and then worked at a native plant farm, Triple Brook Farm, really lovely place. Worked there for years and learned a lot about botanical names and about native plants and the region, which I had never really thought too much about native versus non-native or invasive plants. And did an herbalism apprenticeship at one point. And it's all been very self-taught. I tried to do a correspondence course, and that was a big fail. And finally, my business coach gave me permission to not complete it, because I just had it open for years, like in various places, moving it around, trying to put it higher on the list or lower on the list. And she said, you don't have to do it. So I didn't do it. And I feel like I still have it as a resource, but I'm much more experimental. I like to just play with the plants and grow them and harvest them and process them and use them over being methodical with them. I have a hard time with that. I'm more like, it's summer, what's available? Let's go out and get it and use it and make it, play with it.
I love that about you, and love that about our friendship. Yeah, like what's growing right now. And that's kind of like what we play with.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to be said for eating with the seasons. Like all the medicines that we need are available for anything. Anywhere that where plants grow, there will be medicines in nature. But then as well that, the tender herbs that come up, tender herbs and plants that shoot up in spring are so full of nutrients, and right, that's like something that we might need coming out of the hibernation of winter, like light, salad-y type things, or crisp and readying us to, I don't know, get outside and get more active.
Bitter flavors.
Bitter, too. Right, detoxifying.
Yeah. And in winter, like you were saying about eating seasonally, I have a winter CSA and I love it. It's these roots and these tough greens and cabbage and fermenting cabbage and making sauerkraut a lot this winter. And it's a lot heavier than you'd eat in the spring or summer, but it's great. And these things last too. They're still, I still have half a cabbage from a month ago. It's fine in there. it's there when I want it. But yeah, I love, and food is medicine on so many different levels, just the phytochemical level and the sharing food and community and the process of cooking it. And I definitely identify as a green witch, and I also identify as a kitchen witch. And that's really my comfort spot is the kitchen, is when I have three pots on the burner, and usually I'm straining something at the same time. Like a really good Sunday afternoon for me involves a nice edible and some music and me just like in the flow state in the kitchen doing herbal remedies, making some tea and cooking some food and maybe making some soup and some broth at the same time and then straining it all up and being done. Being like, ah, look at that. I did it all. And dancing at the same time.
Yeah. Yes, all of that.
That's a good flow state.
And the green witch part, is that like your outdoorsiness?
The plants, just connection to plants and herbalism and nature. Yeah.
And you also connect some of your herbalism with astrology, right? Or at least you're noting.
Yeah. Where was I? I was at a medicinal cannabis. This is not that long ago. I think it was 2018, a medicinal cannabis conference it was cannabis and other herbs, and it was in Vermont and Montpelier. And Rochelle Baca was talking about using biodynamic techniques to make her cannabis tinctures along with the phases of the moon. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing I heard of before. And so I really started paying more attention. I've always tracked the moons. I've had the Wee Moon calendar since it was black and white in the 90s, and have used it in various ways and set intentions based on the waxing or waning moon and burn these intentions on the new moon or the full moon. And then so it was just a really nice natural next step to coordinate medicine making with those moon cycles. Ideally, I'd be starting a tincture or an infusion on a new moon, and then I would process it in two full moons. So it would be a 6-week cycle. I don't always do that, though. I often start the things, and then if I'm really good, I'll do a mass processing on a full moon, but often it's whenever I get to it.
Yeah, I know. There's sort of a grace period for me of like 4 or 5 days around, you know.
Yes.
The moon. I'm like, yeah, it's still the new moon energy is still here.
Totally. Yes. I like the grace period.
I mean, in modern society, we have to have a grace period. Now there's business days. It's like astrological business days or something.
Right. Rather a business day versus the calendar days.
Must strain tincture within 3 moon days of...
Of moon.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I like that. I've been following astrology a little more this year, not because I believe that those things actually translate into something happening in my life, because my mind struggles to accept anything that I can't see how it works. Mm-hmm. And I can't understand how Jupiter being somewhere makes something be different in my relationships or something. Uh-huh. And I'm probably butchering astrology right here because I don't even know if Jupiter, Mercury communication and
Mercury retrograde is a big topic several times a year. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So though parts of me are skeptical of how that translates into this, I'm enjoying the organization of it and like putting focus onto a certain area now. And then as the planets change and the phases of the moon change, reflecting on how that period went and like what's the next thing that's coming up. It's like, it's almost like a program. Like I feel like I'm in a program of self-reflection, and it's like self as connected to other people or to my higher self or the planet, or even it's like on a social scale. Mm-hmm. So it's still stimulating me to think about things in this organized way. I mean, I like that I don't have to decide what to focus on. It's there. And then if in fact the planets are doing what astrology says they're doing, it's even more magnificent.
I know. I was definitely raised to not believe in astrology at all because it's based on an earth-centered universe. Mm-hmm. And so my parents were always like, that's ridiculous. It is not an earth-centered universe. It's a sun-centered universe. And yet
Or a sun-centered galaxy. Or no, wait.
Galaxy, not the universe. Yeah, the universe is a little bigger than that.
Or a sun-centered solar system.
We got a solar system. It's not Earth-centered. But I love astrology. It's kind of fun. It's a way to connect. It's also, for me, a good way to remember things about people.
Yeah.
So I can be like, oh, yeah, you're a Gemini.
My therapist was just saying, she's like, it seems like you think like this, blah, 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 blah. But then you also think that, the complete opposite, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm a Gemini. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Why do I get along so well with this person? Oh, because they're, you know, a Leo, or, you know, why is there a problem with this, you know, maybe. But it's a lot of simplification too. And I never went too deeply into it. The most I really pay attention is, again, the moon, where the new moon is and where the full moon is, and our waxing and waning, like the half moons. Sometimes I'll did a really nice ritual for prosperity on a waxing crescent in December. It just felt like the perfect, you know, auspicious moment. And I can't remember what exactly the sign was, but it seemed to all fit together really well. And so, yeah, that's really how I tune into that. And then just from, my mind just captures these details about people. Oh, yeah, you're a double Taurus. That makes sense. You're so grounded.
I want to hear more from you about cannabis. I mean, you know so much about that plant. And yeah, I have my questions, but I think I'll just start with, like, talk about cannabis.
Yeah. So cannabis came into my life when I was 14. And I had a really beautiful first experience on a dock and a lake in Shutesbury, and with a girlfriend who we had this really cool pipe, and I can't remember the name of it right now. It's like a single tube that has the bowl on top, and she showed me, you can like watch as the other person inhales and it spirals in, and it just felt very ceremonial and safe, and it was really beautiful experience. And then it was part of my life really regularly, but not excessively, you know, like maybe once a month or so for high school. And then it got a little more frequent. And then when I went to Evergreen State College out in Olympia, is a whole different world. It was 1994, 95. And the West Coast had such a cannabis industry and, you know, the legacy market, these amazing growers. It was so much more potent. I had some really uncomfortable experiences. For a period of time, felt like there was maybe, in retrospect, I think maybe an entity was setting up shop, and kind of, I had a hitchhiker. I think I had a hitchhiker for a little while, like a period of time, and who would take over sometimes and push me out. And that was really uncomfortable. And we were having such massive doses of cannabis. We had a 4-foot bong, or maybe it was 3-foot bong. Either way, it was like too many feet. And we would just take so many bong hits. And I remember just feeling so anxious and paranoid and this depersonalization. But I decided at a certain point, I was like, well, you're either going to stop this relationship or you're going to smoke your way through it. And it's, what are you going to do? So I decided to smoke my way through it and get to the other end, because I didn't want to end the relationship with this plant. And
I've smoked my way through a lot of relationships.
Yeah. I smoked my way through this one. And I got to the other end and was really involved with the plant for years in different ways. And that continued on. I we weren't growing, but I definitely knew growers, and it was, you know, seeing their sites and learning little tips along the way and picking up books and things. And, you know, I really maintained this is a long-term relationship. This is, you know, going back over 30 years at this point, that this with this plant. And there were times when it was, you know, like that one time when I was like, all right, I'm going to grit my teeth and get through this tough period with you, because I feel like this is my community and it's too much for me to extract myself from this right now. And I wanted to be with this community. This was my community of choice. And I'm glad I did. And then there were other periods when I was in living in New York, when I was in nursing school, and I could not consume cannabis. I was so anxious and having such a hard time with nursing school and the dogma and the training and the hierarchy of medicine, and cannabis doesn't fit with that very well. And so if I tried to smoke, I would just, it just wasn't a good fit. I was terrified. So come to find, there's CBD and there's other ways to work with the plant, and there's tea, and there's, and I didn't know that until I really dove in 2018 when I started working doing the medical cannabis certifications with a clinic here in Mass. And then they gave me the opportunity to do community education. So that's, I got to do the research and deliver education all over the state and in Connecticut. And I learned so much from patients, and became a patient in 2017 and started shifting my relationship out of this whole legacy world and this really the secretiveness of legacy market, or the black market, I guess some people call it, but I really like legacy market. And this secretiveness and this kind of, it's almost it's a different sort of community of, I mean, the secretiveness feels good in a way, but to come to step out of that and be bold and be honest about the fact that cannabis is my ally and a plant that I love and a medicine I use. And it's a whole different world out here on this side. And I kind of want to go back sometime. But can't we just go back to the good old days when everything was a little secretive and we, you know, I didn't have to show my ID a couple times just to, you know, to go to a dispensary.
That's basically like an Apple store.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When we could just hang out in a living room and chat with somebody, the dude on the couch or whoever happened to be passing through. Yeah.
Are there some fun facts or favorite things about that plant that you're called to share right now?
Yeah, my new project that I'm diving into as of yesterday is about microdosing. And I'm going to be creating a project on this and a presentation and a talk on this. And I'm so excited about tiny sub-threshold doses of cannabis as for balance, for wellness, for reducing symptoms, and as more of a preventative instead of a symptom management tool. Because I think that with like the whole purpose of the plant and how it interacts with the body is about maintaining homeostasis or balance. And so since prohibition, we've gone so far into THC land, and THC is one of 150 cannabinoids and all these other components of the flavonoids and the terpenes and these other minor cannabinoids that we don't even know anything about. And so why not? If we could reel it in, and honestly, using it more like a food or like a little boost to get to decrease all of this stress and anguish that we're experiencing. And we have less to treat. And I'm seeing this with my patients, is that the patients who really adopt this and get into small doses a few times a day, including CBD, so like a 1-to-1 ratio, under 3 to 5 milligrams THC total with meals. They just have less symptoms, less issues to manage, and then they are using it THC less in the end. It's really, and then they feel great. I'm talking to people who are like, I feel better than ever, and I used to only use this in the evening. Right, Mimi? I know you really have a lot to say. Come here.
She needs some weed.
Yeah, this kitty needs some weed. And, but yeah, for instance, one of my patients, she was using it. She has chronic pain. And there's this idea that we wait till, you know, 4 or 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And that's the time when we're allowed to start to relax. And then, you know, so many people have insomnia. Or you can't fall asleep or you can't stay asleep. And so that's a good time to take some medicine because you need to sleep.
Right.
So there's, you know, these accept, it's like a cocktail hour or something. Mm-hmm. You have to wait till 5 o'clock for that, for happy hour. But she totally switched the way she's using cannabis with these one-to-one microdoses. And she's like, I don't need it to sleep anymore because the pain isn't accumulating and I'm not stressed. And I'm just able to go to bed and sleep. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is revolutionary. And then same thing with microdosing with the, I used to have a challenging relationship with mushrooms where I really thought I was allergic, not allergic to anything, but really thought I was allergic. I felt my throat was tightening and was worried that I wouldn't be able to breathe. And then came back in with microdosing and it's been life-changing and I have this amazing new relationship where I feel much more comfortable with my mushroom friends too.
Like human friends who like mushrooms?
Nope. Mushroom. Oh, actual mushroom mushrooms.
Got it.
They're my friends.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too, mushroom friends. I've had both kinds.
Yes. Humans also. Humans also. And then ketamine. I'm just learning about ketamine microdosing and tried that for the first time yesterday with a 20 milligram lozenge and was amazed at how much I felt from that, which I wasn't expecting at all. I was expecting to feel nothing. Mm. So I feel like it's kind of a sign of the imbalance of our times and our lives and our collective that we're so into THC and we're so into high dose, everything. And what if we can kind of switch our focus on that and look more at mini dose or micro dose or, you know, just nourishing ourselves instead of getting the ultimate, taking a 50 milligram edible and, you know, hitting the couch.
Yeah. Well, I'm even thinking about that the, you know, psychedelics are getting pushed for these severe disorders and chronic pain that people have, like really serious suffering. And like, what about, you know, doing them when we are well, also, that this could be part of a wellness practice instead of just like, okay, you can only do it if you're like basically have a terminal illness or something like that. Mm-hmm. I obviously think that all of these medicines should be decriminalized, that all medicines should be decriminalized, that you only criminalize people when you criminalize medicines, substances. Mm-hmm. I like to think about parallels of cannabis and psychedelics, particularly like what's happened economically with cannabis and the legacy growers who were basically pushed out by the big businesses and that psychedelics is poised with this chance to not recreate that. And yet I get disheartened seeing signs that it is being recreated.
Absolutely. And without these legacy growers and these people who preserve this knowledge, we wouldn't have any of this to work with now.
Right.
So huge gratitude to everyone who's kept this knowledge alive. And yeah, how do we balance that as we're navigating this capitalism? I mean, how do we balance and legacy market is still capitalism, but it's for some reason feels a little more, I don't know. It feels less risky in terms of losing that, like that connection to the source of the source knowledge. Other things are being passed down. But yeah, I feel like there's a there's a big script we have to flip about waiting for things to get worse or treating things once they're bad. And this is what's fueling our whole broken medical system and the pharmaceutical industrial complex and the insurance system and hospital industrial complex is we wait for things to get worse and then we go heavy on all medications or all treatments. And if we can get ahead of that and start being preventative and expanding consciousness, you know, and expanding our health and wellness, then I mean, maybe we can actually tear these systems down. I would love to see that.
You think we'll see it?
What we're starting to see is alternatives or parallels, like concierge, you know, medical providers.
Uh-huh.
They're just like, okay, I'm just going to work outside of the system. And you just have to pay, you know, $25,000 a year, which compared to insurance and copays, I don't know, maybe it does balance out. I'm not sure. I haven't done the math. But to be really nice to have somebody who you can count on and you know that they're going to be there and give you good advice and not have to play by an algorithm or get prior, you know, authorization from your insurance company to treat you. So I feel like we're starting to see it. I feel like the seeds are planted and COVID consciousness has also helped people see just how broken the system is. And that's like the first step is we have to see how broken it is before we can start creating alternatives and then tearing it apart. But I do think that preventative health and wellness is one way to do it because then you can opt out and say, I don't need this. I don't need all these medications at the age of 30. I don't need to start treating cholesterol issues or metabolic syndrome because I've been putting aside my sleep and my diet for my whole life because I was just focused on work.
Yeah.
If it's all built in from the beginning.
And I'm thinking about therapy too, like couples not going to therapy until they're past the point of no return, or an individual not going to therapy till they have a crisis.
Right. Right. Yeah. I went to therapy when I first started therapy. I had already not slept for a month. I was so exhausted. And I was like, can you just give me a pill that will make me sleep?
Right.
And she's like, no, but we could start meditating. And here I am years later with a meditation practice. So,
well,
grateful for that response.
Yeah. When I first went to therapy, it was like, my boyfriend won't stop drinking. Like, can you help me figure out how to get him to stop drinking? Which I never put this together until this moment. But my grandfather was an alcoholic, and my nana finally went to Al-Anon and sat through, you know, 20 minutes of the meeting or something, and then leaned over to this lady and was like, when are they going to tell me how to fix my husband? And the lady famously said, you're not here for him, hon. You're here for you. And then my nana became a sponsor of like tons of people in Al-Anon for years and years. I mean, she was annoying with her Al-Anon, you know, propagandizing or whatever, proselytizing. But yeah, it's funny. And then that's also calling to mind that the first time I took psychedelics, it was to impress a guy who was into them. So it was just funny. Yeah, and like the opportunities that I've been given, though I came to these things for like a part of me says the wrong reasons or not the reasons I do them anymore, that's for sure. But yeah, to be received, like in your case, we can do meditation. Like that maybe changed the course of your life.
It did. Absolutely. And other people's, because then I was able to share just in the last year, two girlfriends had picked up meditation and journaling and yoga as a morning practice after I told them a few of my like tips for clearing the mind, you know, what works. And it's like a chain. And then they're like telling people at work or telling other friends, you could do this, or sharing their guided meditations that they're using. And Yeah.
Sharing the medicine.
Uh-huh.
Any last thoughts from anything we spoke about today? I would ask you your consciousness hack, but I feel like we've been talking about them the whole time.
Yeah, I'm just really grateful that I am able to live this life with my consciousness hacks kind of built in.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that by figuring out how to build this in and take the breath when I need it, or take the daily walk, or bring in the nerving blend, or, you know, when it's needed, I can feel well, and then other people can respond to that. And it's just sharing the medicine. And there's this thought that, like, it's selfish to take care. Self-care is selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And someone I used to work for used to say that. And, you know, it was, I just disagree. And I think that's another script that we have to flip, that self-care is not selfish. It's, you know, repatterning and then sharing, because you can't share with an empty cup. And then other people will see it, and it just grows and grows.
I think another misconception about self-care is that it has to be this elaborate, like, spa day or something really expensive, or you need this product.
Yeah. Yep.
When actually self-care could look like saying, like, I'm not going to go out to meet, you know, I'm not going to go out to this party, mm-hmm. or something. Or
self-care can be no.
Yep, can be no.
Yeah.
Could be refilling your water bottle right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you, listener. You're thirsty.
Yeah. It can be saying, you know, if there's a joint being passed around, saying, I'm all set.
Yeah.
I'm good with one inhalation. I don't need any more than that. Mm-hmm. I don't need to smoke it till the end and then have the next one, you know? And that was hard to learn too. I love being able to do that now. I love being a lightweight and acknowledging that it's so much better than, like, taking 3-foot bong hits and suffering through the high.
Well, and the beautiful thing about tolerance, like, if you take a pause or give some space, tolerance comes down.
Mm-hmm.
These bodies are pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. A lot of different communities within them that are interacting.
Yeah. Well, I just want to add one more thing. Thinking about the communities interacting within us, because I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know how that works, but I believe in that. Like, I feel into that so much. The planets interacting as well. Like, maybe that will feel as accessible to me one day.
I feel like I'm just constantly learning about it. And I was just talking with a patient who had a transformative pranayama experience, mm-hmm. breathing, and it shifted everything for her with her chronic illness. And she said, I'm doing great. I'm doing so well. I'm not consuming. I stopped drinking alcohol. I changed my diet to vegan. I stopped cannabis, but I want to have access to it just in case I need it back. And we were talking about how all of these different things intertwine, that she's sleeping better because she's drinking less. And because she's drinking less, her gut microbiome is healthier. And because her gut microbiome is healthier, her serotonin levels are higher. And because her serotonin levels are higher, her anxiety and depression are decreased. And then her inflammation is down because she changed her diet, which affects her multiple sclerosis, and which is an inflammatory disease. And I'm like, this is just all intertwined. And is there, like, little moons and satellites within us, I guess. The moons and stars all kind of on their own little spheres, but interacting and bumping into each other, upregulating each other.
Thank you for being a person who upregulates me in my life.
Likewise. Yeah. I'm really grateful that I heard you on that panel, and I was like, who is this? Badass. I need to know.
Oh my gosh, I forgot that's how we first met. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Shout out to Lorna, Liana, and Theo Lucia. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mimi.
Yeah. Thanks, Mimi, for chiming in.
The Psychedologist is Consciousness Positive Radio. Find us everywhere podcasts are hosted. For more information, visit us on Facebook or online at thepsychedologist.com.